Hey, it's Adam Carolla. Now, if you're hearing my voice, it means you like podcasting. And if you like podcasting, well, then you're going to love my show. Lots of funny segments, good bits, great guests, and of course, moi. That's Mexican for me. So check it out at Podcast One, iTunes, or wherever you listen to fine podcasts. The Adam Carolla Show. Throw on your phone. It's free.
Welcome to Doctor Who Podcast. Chris, that music just never gets old. It's weird.
It's good.
It's
yeah.
good, right?
I always enjoy it.
How did we pick that one? It's just the one we went, that's the one. We know
pat
it.
Yourself on the back. You picked this
I
one.
Picked it?
Yeah.
I just
you
knew
said
it.
You wanted something Austin Powers-y.
this is
like the closest thing we could find.
It's really hysterical. I like it better than the Austin Powers.
Me too.
Well, differently. Different. I get different. Thank you for supporting the swinging sound, supporting the podcast. Go to doctor.com, support the products that support us. We try to really select them carefully. And do check out the other podcasts that are there. There's also me and Bob Forrest, me and Dr. Spaz, me and Dr. Bruce. And it's my privilege today to welcome Nicole and Jemmy. Nicole has one of the most popular Instagrams in history. Chris, I suggest you check it out while you're there.
I have a weak stomach, but
you've seen it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. It is at Mrs. The Instagram is at MRS, Mrs. _ and Jemmy, A-N-G-E-M-I. Nicole, welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Good. I'm going to put Nicole on television. I want you to know, Nicole, we are inches away from really moving forward. So it's just about there. So thank you for your patience on all that.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. Because Nicole's life is fascinating. She is a pathology assistant, a pathologist assistant. Her husband is a firefighter. They have two young daughters. And Nicole, if this listener group, I know we did a few weekly infusions with Dr. Bruce, but this group probably hasn't heard, for the most part, your story. So tell them how you got involved in being a pathology assistant and your philosophy about it.
Well, where do you want me to begin with my life?
Well, start with the smell next door. I think it was. I think that's where it really started in pathology, right?
Yeah, sure. So I was working already in the hospital in the cytology laboratory. So for those who do not know what cytology is, that's looking at cells under the microscope, like pap smears and stuff. And we smelled some horrible smell in the hallway. So we went out to see what the smell was and all the commotion was, because we heard a bunch of people, you know, making a big fuss about it. And when we went out to go see what the smell was, everybody said that the leg refrigerator was broken. So when I was like, what is a leg refrigerator? I didn't even understand what was happening. And when I walked over to the pathology department, there was a refrigerator, like similar to one that you would see in a pizza place, that had the sodas in it.
Like the big silver thing with the big handle,
yeah,
that pulls
with
out.
The glass, yeah, door.
Yeah.
And it was filled with amputated legs. And it was broken. It was leaking, and it smelled like death. Like, it smelled like gangrene. And that was my first introduction into that department. So I kind of looked around, and there was just all body parts all over the lab. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I'd rather work over here instead of looking at boring stuff under the microscope.
And even as a cytology tech, you had no idea there was such a thing as gross anatomy or gross growth path?
Yeah, I mean, we learned about it a little bit in school, but I didn't actually get to rotate through the laboratory or see an autopsy while I was in cytology school, so I didn't really know exactly what it was or what was happening right behind the wall that I was working at for 2 years until that day.
And how did you get interested in path generally?
When I went to school to be a nurse, the first time I took biology was in nursing. Well, you know, when I started college for nursing school, and I looked at under the microscope, and that's when I fell in love with science and biology and stuff. So that's when I decided to go to school for that kind of stuff.
And not do clinical work.
Yeah, I looked at like an onion cell under the microscope, and I was like, oh, this is super cool. And I wanted to be a scientist instead of, you know, I definitely couldn't be a nurse and like wipe people's asses and stuff. No way.
And so rather than wipe people's asses, you'd rather open their bellies.
Well, if they're dead, it's fine. Because if you're dead, you're supposed to be gross. But when you're alive, I can't. I just can't.
In one of the clips we're using, you say that autopsies smell gross.
Yeah, they do. But, I mean, if you're doing an autopsy and something, you know, smells really gross, you could make that kind of face where you cringe up and you're like, ew, that shit smells nasty, you know, that kind of face.
Yeah.
But if you're dealing with a live person, you can't make that face
you can't joke.
You smile and say, good afternoon, sir. How are you feeling today, sir? You know, while you're changing that gangrenous leg, you know, that's still attached to them.
You can't joke and you can't appear disgusted. So, all right. So you started doing pathology, and then where'd you go next after the leg refrigerator?
Well, I walked over to my boss at the time and I said, hey, can I just get a job? Can I just kind of transfer over here instead of working there? And he kind of let me do that. And then I went back to school to become an official PA while I was working over in the path lab.
And describe what a pathologist assistant does.
So we do two things. We work in the surgical pathology laboratory and we dissect specimens that come over from surgery. So if you have colon cancer, we would get your colon, or if you have breast cancer, we would get your breast, and we would cut it up and look for the tumor and help kind of stage the cancer so the oncologist knows how to treat or look for infections and things like that. And then we also perform autopsies to determine the cause of death.
It seems like autopsies are generally they won't do as many as they used to because we have so much diagnostic imagery. So we sort of know what's going on at the time of death. Who gets the autopsies?
Yeah, so autopsies are definitely decreasing every single year. There's definitely more done in teaching institutions that are affiliated with medical schools than ones that are at smaller community hospitals. But if it's a natural death and it's in the hospital, it's kind of up to the family if it's done at the hospital or not. But if it's something that's kind of under the jurisdiction of a medical examiner or coroner, that would be up to the, you know, the law to do it. So, you know, if it's something that's considered suspicious or an unknown death, or that would be something like a forensic autopsy, some natural death will be done there, like if a homeless person's found and they don't really know how they died, but it's mostly homicides and suicides and accidents that are done under those forensic autopsies.
Do you do the autopsies for the medical examiners, or those have to go somewhere else?
No, they go to the medical examiner or coroner's offices.
Right. And so you got involved in this, and you've had sort of developed a passion for using it as a teaching tool. Talk about that.
So I would have this conference every month, which was called Gross Conference, that I held with Dr. Farber, who was one of my mentors. And basically, I would save 10 interesting cases from surgeries, surgical pathology, and from autopsy. So I would save the organs, which would actually show how the person died or the show what was the gross cause of
the illness.
You know, the infection or the illness.
Yeah.
And I would place them on I would actually go to the cafeteria and steal trays from the cafeteria, and I would place them on cafeteria trays in the morgue on the silver table, and it would be labeled 1 through 10, and I would invite all of the surgery residents down, and I would invite the actual surgeons down, the medicine team, medical students, everybody. There would be like 50 people down in the morgue, and we would be like, okay, case number one. This patient, this is how they died, and, you know, it would be patients that they actually took care of. So we would go over it, and we would be like, okay, this is their colon, you know, this is what we found at autopsy. Can you please tell us how they died? And, for example, we would have, like, the whole entire colon open up, and it would be a classic case of, like, C. diff, for example. And we would have them look at the mucosa of the colon, and we would say, you know, what are we looking at here? What is this finding? How could you have prevented them from getting this or dying from this? And so it was so cool and so much fun and like the best experience of my life. So I wanted to kind of bring that to social media.
So how long did you do that for? Or do you still do it?
Just a couple months, honestly. It was something that we weren't able to kind of maintain, but, well, I ended up leaving that hospital, but it was, I did it for the last couple months of my employment there.
And it seems like a really not only effective teaching instrument, teaching tool from the standpoint of making the students and the residents think through what happened to this person and what they might have done differently, it connects it to the gross anatomy of the pathology.
Oh yeah, it was absolutely amazing for them to be able to see that, and you know, it kind of gets them thinking in a different way because they don't get to see the actual organs. Because they're not looking at it from that, they're used to looking at CTs and MRIs, and they don't really actually get to see the organs. And we would have, you know, cardiac surgeons down there looking at the heart transplants that they actually performed, and you know, it's just super cool to get to see, you know, years post, you know, a surgery that they performed or something like that. It was just like really, really awesome teaching tool.
Were there any real surprises in the process of doing this?
Oh yeah, we had. I mean, I worked in a teaching hospital for years, so we had, you know, from time to time we would have some mistakes that were made, minor mistakes, some major mistakes, and you know, other things. Really, really, really interesting, super, super interesting cases of just thinking it was one pathology and it becoming another pathology, and it's really awesome stuff that we would find.
Can you remember anything particular you could share with us? Or I know it's
We had a really cool case of a young female that was in her 30s that had this these really thick vessels around her heart that they were thinking that she had some kind of a vasculitis around her coronary arteries. And when they were treating her for some kind of a vasculitis, just because she just had these really, what they were thinking were just like thick vascular walls of the artery.
Wait, I'm already getting confused. Hold on a second. Like she had like Takayasu's arteritis, like a large vessel vasculitis, or there was something growing around her coronary arteries?
Yeah, they thought that the wall itself of the artery was thickened.
That's Takayasu's. Oh. Okay. Like a bigger arteries. Okay.
Yeah. So when we did the autopsy, it actually turns out that she had some, I don't remember what the actual lymphoma was, but it was a lymphoma that was encasing her coronary arteries.
Wow.
Like tubular structure. So they were treating her for something completely different.
God, I don't know how they could have possibly. That's like a diagnosis that's essentially impossible to make. I don't know how they would have made it.
I mean, we made it because we had her heart in our hand and we were able to cut cross sections of the coronary artery.
No, I get that, but I'm trying to think how they could have possibly made that diagnosis in life. It'd been almost impossible. I don't imagine, unless the lymphoma showed up somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. These are amazing cases that when people try to say that you can eliminate autopsy forever, it's just, you can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a great example.
I could email you that case later because I have the imaging studies and the growth for it. If you would like to see it.
Love to see it. I'd love to see it. It's fascinating.
Just cases like that in general all the time. I told you last week about that systemic herpes case that they didn't know why that woman was,
and liver failure. That one still bothers me. I'm still not convinced. That one still bugs me. She. What Nicole does is, Gary, she will give us pictures of her gross specimens, me and Bruce, and go, "What is this?" And we never get it. And this was one of the most obscure ones. It was a massive hepatic necrosis. I don't know what we thought it was. I think we guessed around the liver, basically.
By the way, I'd like to thank you for sending me to her Instagram without giving me any warning.
Just now? You just went?
No, you sent me a few weeks ago, and I happened to be eating lunch at the time.
Oh,
it was
good.
Delightful.
That's good. Both Nicole and I don't understand why it grosses you out so much. Right? Would you
it
say, Nicole?
It doesn't gross me out
not
that
at all.
Much.
I would eat a hamburger over a dead body. I don't care.
It's weird to me that and she doesn't go out of her way, although you've put some weird... Some of those car accidents, those are troubling for me. I can't. I have a weird thing about injury in the field because it feels so out of control. And you've posted.
I know. Well, my husband deals with that all the time, and I don't understand. He has people that are like, oh, my leg, cut off my leg, like freaking out in their car and stuff. And I'm like, oh, no, I could not deal with that.
Right. That's tough for me. But you put some videos up. Were those his videos?
No.
The guy with his face hanging off and the beheadings,
oh, God,
and things?
I know.
Yeah.
He deals with, oh, my God, he deals with that kind of stuff all the time. I can't even imagine it.
Oh, sheesh. Well,
like cutting people out of cars with the jaws of life and stuff.
Oh, my God.
I can't even imagine it.
Awful. Yeah, it's something about the in the fieldness that troubles me, but in a controlled environment, it doesn't bother me at all. So I want to get back to – wait, what was – oh, what do you think – I know because you and I have been exposed to all the incredible array of things that can happen to the human biology – what do we do to help the average person understand that? They get so focused on controlling and not getting illness that they think they can prevent from even being biological. You know what I mean? There's a certain amount of massive denial in our country about the fact that we are these biological beings and this vast array of things can happen to us medically. Do you know what I'm getting at, Nicole?
You're saying that... Are you saying basically like that people think that anything can be healed type of thing?
Well, not everything can be healed, right. Or they can heal things magically because they're in denial about what medical problems are. Or they're always shocked if something happens. Like, how could this be? I've never had anything. Yeah, you never have anything until you have it. And there's this tremendous array of things that happen to the human biology that we all seem in this massive collective denial about. But denial is not just... like the way we deny earthquakes, it's a denial that suggests almost an ignorance to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see that often, very often.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts about that? I've always wondered how do we – I mean, I don't want to frighten everybody with this, but, there are gigantic textbooks filled with all the different things that happen to human beings. They just happen to us. And people seem sort of it's just unaware of it somehow.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's harder for us to imagine because we're just in the field and we just know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And so you
kind of it blows my mind.
Yeah, me too. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. A lot of times that is not the case. People configure cars online only later to find out they are not available. Not with TrueCar. Of course, I'm talking about TrueCar. You get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. This is a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Yeah, and we talk about all the time. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. Next, TrueCar, TrueCar.com or TrueCar app will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Over 3,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers are available nationwide. You will get to work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer that you make contact with, and TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster, better buying experience when they contact a TrueCar Certified Dealer. And on average, you can expect to save over $3,000 off MSRP. Once you register, you'll see a real price on actual inventory. Hook up with that TrueCar certified dealer. Have a better buying experience. TrueCar, go to the TrueCar.com or TrueCar app. Do what I'm telling you. All right. So you got excited about teaching students. And one of your philosophies, as I recall, was that you got frustrated that only medical students and doctors and residents got to see this stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's super cool. Whenever I was just like hanging out with any of my regular friends that don't work in the field, I mean, everybody thinks it's super cool whenever I talk about my job. So I just was like, I'm just going to post this. And, like some of my friends that knew that I did autopsy and stuff, they would want to look at pictures. They would be like, let me see like a picture of an autopsy. And I'd be like, okay, look. And they think it's super cool.
Some of that's motivated. The viewer's motivation is a morbid curiosity. Your motivation is to educate.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just super cool to be like to be able to look at anything and say, oh, this is. I mean, I think that the first time that I ever really got that feeling was that when you get that you could look at a piece of tissue like under the microscope and just if I gave you a piece of pink tissue on a microscope slide, I could just look at it and say, oh, this is liver.
Right.
And the first time I said, wait, you can look at this under the microscope and be able to tell me that this is liver?
Yeah.
And then the doctor was like, yeah. And I was like, really? She's like, yeah. And I was like, that's the coolest thing I ever heard. That's so cool.
But that's the microscopic pathology. That's different than the gross specimens.
To bring it to the gross, it's like, oh, you could look at this, you know, colon and be able to tell that it's, you know, stage 2 colon cancer. Yeah.
And by gross, we just mean visual inspection, you know, able to be seen without a microscope. It's the large anatomy.
Yeah, but like, oh, you could look at this lung sliced open and be able to tell that this person died from a pulmonary embolism. How cool is that? Like,
yeah,
that's like the coolest thing ever. You know what I think it's like super rewarding to be able to open a body and be able to say, like I could do it. Sometimes I could do an autopsy and open a body and be like, that's how they died.
Have you gotten like, good enough that you kind of know going in, even without reading the?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it depends. Like I have these two theories. You either drop dead or you die slowly. Like, I mean, it's not like I have these theories. That's just the way it is. Like there's two things.
And let's go through the drop dead. The drop dead is coronary arrhythmia, myocardial something.
Well, usually dropping dead is something that you can see.
Right.
Right. So, it's like,
yeah. So it's something in the heart, lung, or brain, typically, right?
Yeah, like so. But it could be something cool too. It could be like a perforated bowel or a ruptured aneurysm. It could be something really cool that you open up and the belly's full of blood, or you know what I mean. Like
yep.
It could be something fun too. But the thing is that if someone, you know, working in the teaching hospital, especially in a trauma center and all this kind of stuff, it's like someone dies slowly. It's like they're the Hep C juicy people that are just like filled with fluid, and you know it's kind of like their liver is nodular, they're filled with fluid, they've been dying for 6 months, but you know they didn't drop dead, you know what I mean?
Right.
There's
well,
like
the
600 reasons in their body why they're dead.
Right. And those stories have more of a narrative structure to them that you have to keep,
yeah.
Or a puzzle. You have to keep connecting the dots to put the narrative together, and then you have to prove your narrative with the evidence that you've got in the past specimens, which is, you know, and again, you can get very, very good at that. People aren't used to thinking that way. And so you got excited about teaching, and then you started Instagram.
Yeah, my husband was doing the Instagram thing with his photos that he takes in the city. He works in Camden, New Jersey, which is like a really low socioeconomic kind of rough city. So he was taking some pictures in the neighborhoods he works in, and he started an Instagram, and then he got me hooked on it. And I started about 4 years ago, and my account got deleted like 4 times since I started.
Well, let's talk about that. So you'd get up to 1 million followers very fast because people get obsessed with your stuff, and then Instagram itself would delete you?
Yeah.
Because?
Because my content was like too whatever, racy.
Can you tell us?
X-rated, whatever.
Like what were the ones that really got them?
Oh, I mean, one time, the last time my account got deleted, which was when I was up to the most, you know, every time it was like a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, but last time was when I was up to the most followers, was I posted a video of just like opening a colon that was just like full of poop after. After Thanksgiving, because it was like full of. I just think it's really funny, like a day after Thanksgiving, whenever we get like a colon, it's always full of like carrots and corn. It's just like funny. It's like Thanksgiving dinner.
Is it
colons?
The one that got you kicked off fly open? Is that what happened?
It's just like it, it's just It's just a thing in pathology. It's just like, you know, on Black Friday when you work, your colons are all going to be filled with Thanksgiving dinner. It's like funny.
That's so funny. All right. And so you had some sexual material too, like a vagina or something that got you nailed too, right?
Oh, yeah. Like I posted, I think it was like that. What was it? Vaginal mucosa or something? It's something stupid.
Or a vulva cancer or something?
Labioplasty or something. It was one of those things.
And that for some reason got you
I axed. Get dinged for the or like foreskin. Oh, foreskin got me dinged one time.
From a
little kid or something, or maybe from phimosis. I don't even remember.
Maybe it was a child's foreskin that got everybody freaked out. And what's up there now? What do you have up currently on your what are you proud of that's a teaching help?
I just did a mystery diagnosis on CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, because that's like a kind of a hot topic right now.
I saw that one. There was a lot of atrophy in that brain, right?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I try to hit on some things that are like hot topics, even though a lot of things aren't really new. It's just kind of like some things are being talked about.
Seems like some of them are sort of stock medical education pictures, not so much things from your own path lab. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously don't do autopsies on NFL players.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just like a Google image.
Are there confidentiality issues in terms of posting some of these things? Does there anybody object to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's HIPAA violations as far as using anybody's face when it comes to the current, you know, privacy laws.
But you can use their organs.
Well, you're not supposed to use their, when it's considered like privacy and protected health information, you're not allowed to use like their face is considered as much as like a social security number or tattoos or anything like that as like an identifying marker kind of thing. So whenever I, like most of the photos that I get and posts are submitted to me, and then I get permission from the people that submit them to me.
Got it.
So usually if I post a picture, with someone's face in it anyway, it's for like the one I did the other day of the kids with the broken arm.
That's
the kid's mom.
The skateboarding sent it to me. Skateboarding accident.
Yeah.
My son,
That one did crop off her eyes. But.
Weirdly, that one didn't bother me at all, and I thought.
See, that one bothered me. Actually.
Well, I'll tell you why. My son broke his arm playing football and had almost the same appearance, and I was so mad at the trainer. He's like, "Oh, he's dislocated his wrist." I said, "Look, if he dislocated his wrist, he fractured and dislocated his wrist. Trust me." I threw him in the car, took him to the hospital, and it's, you know, a broken arm. That's what a broken arm looks like. That was just a dramatic version of it that she had. She broke both bones in the arm in that case, right?
Oh God! I don't know. If my kid had that, I would be freaking out.
They heal really well. They heal very nicely. and I've noticed you put a lot of fetus stuff up. What's that all about?
I don't know. I mean, I'm a mom and I'm a woman, so I've had three kids, so I think that it just like hits home for me kind of. And I get so much of them. I actually have one that I'm about to post too, but I think I'd like to keep the topic of abortion kind of like people talking about it and
so giving them a more realistic sense.
I don't like talking about it myself. I just want people to talk about it.
Well, no, it keeps the biological reality in front of them a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So they understand the decision making they're espousing on either side. And
yeah, totally.
And what is it you're about to post? A fetus of what?
Well, it's a fetus it's pretty small. It's probably only about 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a girl that basically she sent me her story that she was told by the abortion place that it was a clump of cells and given drugs, abortion drugs to take, and that's what she miscarried. And she's just wanted me to share the photo of what she miscarried.
It freaked her out a little bit.
Yeah. So
it's sounding more like it was more than 7 weeks, though, judging by what I think I'm going to see. Right? Could you tell the sex of it?
No. I mean, it just looks like a fetus.
It looks human. Like a pre-human.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, I think to me that's important because I'm not trying to be some kind of like propaganda website on either side. I'm just posting what it is.
Yeah, just the biological reality.
It is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you're
you know
teaching.
I mean?
You're a biological teacher. You just want to show the facts, and people can.
And it's not just for that topic. It's just for like any topic. I'm not trying to like, even though people like try to write stupid stuff that I hate certain breeds of dogs or whatever. Like
you hate breeds of dogs? Why?
Yeah, they just write crazy stuff because I feel as if I post multiple images of pit bull injuries that I have something against certain breeds of dogs or whatever.
Oh, I see.
I mean, I just post what it is. Like, I don't make up whatever is occurring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you just post the facts. Let's go over some strange cases you've been involved with, if you don't mind, if you can think of them. I know it's hard on a moment's notice to come up with just a random case. But in cases that really stayed with you, that surprised you, which there were interesting path that you were able to discover sort of interesting aspects to the case that sort of helped elucidate the mystery. Ooh, I'm looking at that arm right now. It's good times. I just went to your.
Oh, the
I just
arm?
Went. Yeah, I just went to your Instagram. Like, boop, boop, there's that arm. So.
Oh, so any wait.
Any case that occurred to you, and you know, case that really stood out as interesting in your mind, that you can think of that you're particularly that your in gross pathology investigation significantly contributed to elucidating what had occurred. But anything else, I'm also reminded looking at your Instagram that there are lots of things up the rectum. Lots of things up the rectum. That's the other thing Nicole specializes in. Gary, if you didn't check that out. And it's funny.
I'm sorry, Drew. What
I said Nicole has lots of pictures of lots of different things up people's rectums. And if you work in the ER, that's something you see all the damn time. It was the first thing that struck me when I was doing ER rotations. And obviously, Nicole, you're fascinated by that too.
I just – I am fascinated by it because I just can't believe – that was one of the things when I started working in the lab. I just couldn't believe how many of those that I would get all the time. And just thinking, you know, wow, this is really a thing. Like, people really stick things up their – like, I understand that people stick things up their butt, whatever. I mean, it's fun, you know, but like the fact that people are getting it stuck up there all the time like this is just it's an epidemic, Drew. It's an epidemic.
Well, listen, the thing that got me was not just that stuff was up there, is that their explanations for it are unbelievable.
And the objects that they use, I mean, it's 2017. Like, let's order a dildo online, okay, people?
I think some of it, I really thought some of it was like gang violence or something. Like, if you don't pay your debt, I'm going to push, you know, that broomstick up your ass. And then they go and do it. You know what I mean? And then the patient guy comes into the ER and you say, how'd that happen? And they go, oh, I slipped and sat on it. That's always their thing. I slipped and fell down, and I sat on it. Oh, really? That grapefruit? You sat on it? Grapefruit? I sit on a grapefruit, essentially the grapefruit just juices. It doesn't go up my rectum. And by the way, where were your pants at the time? Right?
I don't know. I think I've never you know done any kind of rotations on the floors. So I would be super interested to see it from that perspective.
You could just spend a day in the ER and you would see something.
I would love to spend a day on the floor. Like, I would love it so much to spend a day on the floors. I've never talked to patients really like this. And this is what's really cool about my Instagram is that I get to talk to patients.
Yeah. Yeah. And you should go to medical school. I mean, you could pull that off, I bet.
One of the really exciting parts of working in recovery is not just seeing patients get well, but seeing them get, well, amazing and actually go off and become mental health professionals themselves. The field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners has never been greater. So if you're considering this rewarding career, I suggest you consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. I've known Alliant University for years now. I'm proud to have spoken at their events in the past. It was founded in 1969, boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 individuals working worldwide, and it's fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, and clinical counseling. They also offer an APA-accredited doctoral program in clinical psychology that allows for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. Their faculty is made up of industry leaders, and former faculty names include the likes of Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. So for more information on the School of Professional Psychology at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on my site or visit alliant.edu. That is alliant.edu.
I'm pleased to tell you about BetterHelp. They allow you to connect with a licensed professional counselor in a safe, private environment. No more explaining why you have to leave work early, no fighting traffic. And if you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time. No waiting list. You'll be communicating in 24 hours. And best of all, this is affordable. Pricing start at $35 a week. This means a month of online therapy can cost less than a single face-to-face session traditionally. And for our listeners ages 18 and over, BetterHelp is offering 7 days of free counseling so you can experience the service and determine if it's right for you. Just go to BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Dr. Drew. Fill out a questionnaire, and that will help them assess your needs and match you with a counselor who you are going to love. That is BetterHelp.com/Dr. Drew to get started today. Need to be 18 years or older to work with that counselor. Pricing starts as low as $35 a week, billed monthly, and members will get unlimited communication via 4 modes, text, chat, phone, and video for that flat monthly fee. It's available worldwide, so wherever you are, you can get to your BetterHelp counselor. That is BetterHelp.com/Dr. Drew.
There was another one you put up that really caught my attention. I thought was really lovely. Was that one girl with the lymphoma? That I forget the story, but you put the whole story up there. 22-year-old,
the young girl.
Yeah,
22-year-old.
Yeah,
I know. I feel like there's so many different things like that happen where I have so many stories like that where it's just like people are kind of being their own health advocates because they're going to the doctor and they're getting blown off, and then they're kind of either going for a second opinion of themselves or they're pushing for their own thing, and then all of a sudden it comes back and it's something that's really, you know, bad, or it's something that, thank God they pushed for it because it ended up being something that was more significant than what they were told.
You have 1.2 million followers now. Hopefully Instagram will back you in this. So I'm going to go back to my question I asked you about a case that really stayed with you or interested you, an interesting mystery that got solved. You have anything that comes to mind?
Oh, my God.
I know. It's hard.
It's so difficult because there's just so many.
It's hard to be, if somebody asked me that, I'd be like, I'd probably go back to training to think of something. But what about a weird infection? Any weird infections that you saw that you're not supposed to see in this country, for instance? That's something we used to see a lot in Southern California.
I was trying to think of what infection one of my... We had so many weird infections because we had, at the one hospital I was at, we had a high HIV population. So we would get, frozen sections on everything. So a frozen section is a specimen that's sent down during surgery while the patient's still, asleep. So if we got a frozen section on a brain and the person had lymphoma, that's like automatic, the person has HIV. Like, we would just automatically be like, there's a high probability this person has HIV.
Right.
And the one patient had, I'm trying to think of I'm like, sort of.
If you see, you know, toxoplasmosis in the brain, or if you see.
Yeah, it was, that's what it was, toxo.
Yeah.
So my friend, Andrea, was like freaking 9 months pregnant cutting a frozen on a toxo
brain. All right, let's explain why that's a big deal. Go ahead.
So toxoplasmosis is the one that is present in cat feces, which is why they tell you when you're pregnant that you're not supposed to change the kitty litter.
Right. It can cause the torch syndrome. It's the T in torch, and it can cause birth defects.
So Andrea, like, could you imagine, Andrea calls her CYN and her obstetrician, I mean, she says, I'm 9 months pregnant and I just was exposed to breeding tissue with toxoplasmosis. And her doctor's like, I'm going to have to look that one up. Like, this doesn't happen every day.
Whether just the exposure to toxo or the fact that it was a...
No, they basically told her that she would have had to eat it if...
Well, it's airborne. It's airborne. At least in the cat.
The toxo? Yeah, but...
It's the spores, though. It's not the. It's probably not the toxo itself. I think it's the spores that develop in the feces.
Yeah, and the brain tissue was frozen.
Yeah,
and it's like we used the glass. It was... And she was all right, but she was freaking out, you know?
Oh, if I were her gynecologist or obstetrician, I'd be freaked out, too. I'd have to look that all up.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes they even... Is it tetracycline or something? Of course, you don't want to give that to a pregnant woman if you don't have to. It gets complicated fast. Anything else? Any other?
I mean, there's a couple of us girls that worked the entire 9 months of our pregnancy, and I was exposed to TB in my ninth month of pregnancy there, and I was just the same thing, like calling the doctor, being like, well, I just cut a frozen section on a TB. Like, what do I do?
Well, I think the frozen keeps you relatively protected, but.
Now, that's a big concern with us is, well, you know, we would get frozen sent down all the time because the TB is hot on PET scan, and then when we get it, you know, it kind of looks like a tumor on PET scan, and then we get it in the lab, and we get it, and they think it's a tumor, and then it's TB.
Right.
When we look at it, but those little pieces of the frozen flying all over, if you breathe it in, in theory, you could get it, I guess.
Yeah. And you probably see amavium, these rare TB-like avium intracellulare, it's called. That's also HIV.
We've had you know, Neisseria meningitis case. I had, that was like in the very, very beginning at a different hospital. I had seen a case of an autopsy of that.
Ugh.
That was super cool.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously it was terrible for them, but...
Yeah, but interesting.
If I say anything super cool, it usually means it was really horrible for someone else.
No, that's what I always tell patients. I say, the one thing you don't want to be is an interesting patient for the doctor. You do not want to be interesting, because if it's interesting, it's not good. It's not going to go...
I know.
It's not something fun.
I always feel bad on my Instagram. Like, people write me an email and be like, I have this, and I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. Some lady emails me this week and tells me that she's pregnant with Siamese twins.
Wow. Conjoined twins.
Well,
wow.
I know. I said, I've never, and I was talking to her, and I said, well, I've never actually met or talked to anybody that has had this diagnosis before.
Where are they conjoined, we know?
They're not. It's not going to be good for her. That's what I said. The first thing I wrote to her, I was like, okay, don't freak out yet. There's some that are okay, and they're conjoined. So they have two heads, and they're conjoined at the thorax and the abdomen. They basically were just like, she sent me the scans, but they told her, like, nah.
Are you going to put that up? It's up to her.
I don't know.
It's up to her.
I feel, you know what, in case there's people that send me stories like that sometimes, and I'm kind of like, she's going through so much shit right now. I don't really need to put that up right now. You know what I mean?
Not only that, it'd be up to her for sure, but not only that, it doesn't really teach anything. It just shows just the anomalies of the, you know, developmental process.
Yeah, and like, you know what, the problem is that, like, basically she has to get an abortion, right? And there's going to be some asshole that says something mean to her, and like, she doesn't need to be dealing with that right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just, she's in one of these situations where she's effed either way, so like she just doesn't need to deal with the comments.
Well, speaking of teaching, you know, the other thing you were hot on is mental health. Let's spend the last few minutes talking about that. You sound great right now.
I'm having a really good day today.
That's good.
Yesterday, not so much.
All right. Describe
you know
this,
how it goes.
Yeah. Describe to this group what's going on there.
So I have been diagnosed bipolar when I was in my early 20s. I don't know if I have the right diagnosis, but that's what they tell me. So I kind of struggle with it all the time. I guess to describe to anybody what it is, when I have good days, I just feel like I don't really feel normal. I feel more like extra, like excited or like just like happy or
a little high almost.
Yeah, just like I feel like, you know, like I always say it's like I feel like when I used to go to my grandma's house at like on Christmas Eve, like when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I felt, like, really happy to be there and, like, excited I was going to open presents and, like, happy to be with my family and stuff like that. And then usually it turns, it like, the next day or something, it'll turn into, like, anxiety. And then it'll all of a sudden turn into, like, really bad depression. And then it's just kind of like a cycle that... And it's not just like, oh, I'm sad. It's just like really bad. Like I just want to be under the covers all day, kind of like horrible. And then once I get out of that, like I feel like pretty high again. Like it's just kind of like a cycle that just keeps happening. So you're supposed to, from what I learned, you're supposed to take medication to kind of like even that all out so it doesn't like happen like that. But it's not as simple as just like taking a pill to make that go away.
Right. But the pills help stabilize it. And you wanted to just to give us your thoughts on mental health awareness and stigma and that kind of stuff, because I know you feel strongly about that.
I think I just wish that more people would talk about it, because I think I think right now it just has a stigma and that nobody talks about it, and that's why there's, you know, so many problems in the world and everything. And I don't know. I hear some people sometimes be like, oh, that person's so crazy, whatever, like that. And it's like everybody's got their shit or whatever. And I don't know. I just think it's fine to talk about. And
well, here's also, yeah. Go ahead. Also.
No, I don't really. I don't know.
Well, I was going to say that the thing that bugs me is that a lot of people just sort of waste a lot of air and ink on stigma. Oh, we're going to reduce stigma, reduce stigma. But as soon as somebody is struggling with their illness or their behaviors are problematic to be around, well, then they start shaming the hell out of them. I'm like, look. That's when you don't stigmatize people, when they're drinking or when they're depressed or when they're mad or whatever it is, or when they're angry and irritable. That's when you go, oh, that's that thing again. Don't stigmatize them for it. It's easy to say no stigma when it's just words like bipolar or addiction. But if it's actually somebody who's behaving in a certain way, we are brutal. We're ruthless to people that are in that condition that everyone claims they don't want to stigmatize. So I've got a real problem with that right now, is that lots of stigmatizing of people in their illnesses when they behave in ways we just don't like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah, totally. I mean, that's
troubling to me, really troubling. It's very easy to say, oh, yes, we need to have reduce stigma. Let's reduce stigma when the rubber really hits the road. That's the time to do that.
Well, yeah, but the only people that want to reduce stigma are the people like me that actually have it.
No, I disagree with that. I'm sure it feels that way, but no, you have armies of people that want to reduce stigma because it sounds good. You know what I mean? But you know what I mean? Everyone, well, we shouldn't, of course. It's, you know, when we think about it, it's, yeah, of course, the brain illnesses are just like any other illness. We shouldn't stigmatize people for having those illnesses. But then they don't think about the people that irritate them. Then they stigmatize them. And so that's...
It just, I mean, to me, like, I'm a person that's, like, pretty, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm like a higher educated person in medicine. And like, to me, it's just like, it's the same as having a brain tumor.
That's right.
Like I would, and some days I wish I just did have a brain tumor. I wish I could just go to a doctor and get this shit cut out.
Yes. Or I've heard people say it's as disabling as if I had a, you know, a back injury or a leg injury.
No, it is. Like I can't stress to you enough how bad I wish I could just go get a chunk of my brain cut out right now and make it go away. Like,
drug addicts ask for that all the time. If it's my brain, take that part of my brain out. Fine. Good. Take it out.
Yeah.
not so easy. Well, listen, Nicole, thank you for spending a little time with us. It's Mrs. MRS underscore Angemi, A-N-G-E-M-I is the Instagram. According to Gary, you shouldn't check it out during lunch, but otherwise check it out.
No, I think that these people have got fair warning of what might be there.
All right. And
I posted a picture of my kid today.
Yeah, I looked at it this morning. It's not nearly as scary as when you sent me there.
Yeah, it was your kid and then you, I think, wearing one of your autopsy t-shirts. Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to hang up. I'm going to post something really gnarly, okay?
Okay, great. Chris, go on that, all right? Chris, get on her website.
I'm still trying to get over the leg fridge. That's weird to me.
I'm having dinner in about an hour and a half. I'll be sure to check it out, Nicole.
Oh, my God, that's so funny. And then you and I will get together soon because I'm telling you, we are on the eve. All the pieces are starting to line up here, so we're going to...
Oh, I know, and I think I'm coming in a couple of weeks, actually.
Oh, that's perfect. It's perfect because we should have everything together.
We'll get to hang out in person.
Great. Done and done. And Nicole, thank you. And for everybody else, we'll see you next time.
All right, bye.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com.